All right. Job's friends, miserable comforters. That is a quote from Job. We're not trying to put Job's friends down ourselves. That's not a label that we use. That's really how Job felt about his friends. In Job chapter 16, in verses 1 and 2, after he's heard several speeches from his friends, verse 1 says, Job answered and said, I have heard many such things. Miserable comforters are you all. You get the feeling that if Job were in a hospital room, he'd call the nurses and the staff and say, escort them out. I'm tired of hearing from them. They're not helping me recover at all. And so this is his response. They're miserable comforters. What were some of the things that they did which made them deserving of this title? As you think. Right. They become assessors of why this is happening to Job, and they begin attacking him personally, really, and spiritually, that this is your fault, you're sick. And of course, that's a discouragement to them. And that's really the philosophy that we're going to get into next week. But yeah, that's the basic gist of it. Anything else that you'd share as you think about what made them miserable comforters? Well, if nothing else, let's look at some quotes from them, and we'll see some of the things that they were saying that would make them miserable comforters. Let's start with Eliphaz. You read about Eliphaz and some of the things he says in Job 4. Of course, Job speaks in Job 3. So they've been silent for 7 days and seven nights. Job chapter 2 says, the last three verses there, they've been quiet. And then Job finally speaks, and he regrets the fact that he was born. He wishes he were dead. He is speaking out of grief. He's miserable. And that's sometimes what people do when we're grieving and when we're miserable. Sometimes we just say things that I just wish I wasn't here right now. I'm ready to be done with this life. And that's how Job feels. And this is how his friends respond. Eliphaz says this, remember, all right, you've just regretted the day you were born. Job, remember, who that was innocent ever perished? Or where were the upright cut off? As I have seen, those who plow iniquity and sow trouble reap the same. By the breath of God they perish, and by the blast of his anger they are consumed. There's Eliphaz's comforting words. I know you're grieving, I know you're struggling right now, but you're not innocent, you're not upright, you're plowing iniquity, you've been sowing trouble, and this is God's punishment upon you. Okay? What's his implication there? Not really even an implication, it's just pretty straightforward. He has some questions, so he doesn't just come right out and call him that, but the implication is pretty clear. What's the implication there? It's your fault. Yeah, you're a sinful, iniquitous person, and maybe you've just been hiding it, nobody knew about it all this time, but this is your fault. So how does that differ? This is important. This is why the first two chapters are so important to set this up. How does this differ from what God had already said about Job?
Job said he was, God said he was an upright man.
Yeah. Have you considered my servant Job, one who is pure and upright and blameless before me? And so his friends are saying one thing about him, and God says, you know, who knows man's heart? That's not true. So, now read some of Job's response. We're just going to read some sections of text here because, like I've mentioned, we've got 42 chapters to cover in 12 weeks, and you can't read, you know, it's difficult to read 42 chapters. And so we're reading excerpts here. But Job says this in verse 14. To him who is afflicted, kindness should be shown by his friend, even though he forsakes the fear of the Almighty. My brothers have dealt deceitfully like a brook, like the streams of the brooks that pass away, which are dark because of the ice and into which the snow vanishes. When it is warm, they cease to flow. When it is hot, they vanish from their place. The paths of their way turn aside. They go nowhere and perish. The caravans of Tema look. The travelers of Sheba hope for them. They are disappointed because they were confident. They come there and are confused. For now you are nothing. You see terror and are afraid. Did I ever say, bring something to me, or offer a bribe for me from your wealth, or deliver me from the enemy's hand, or redeem me from the hand of oppressors? Teach me, and I will hold my tongue. Cause me to understand wherein I have erred. How forceful are right words! But what does your arguing prove? Do you intend to rebuke my words and the speeches of a desperate one, which are as wind? Yes, you overwhelm the fatherless, you undermine your friend. And now, therefore, be pleased to look at me, for I would never lie to your face. I don't know if we need to say a whole lot about what he's just said there. You're not being kind. You're assuming that I would lie to you. I wouldn't lie to you. Can you give me an example in my life where I've ever asked for a bribe or I've ever asked to be deceitful with someone? You're accusing me of that. Can you prove that? I'd like for you to prove it. And so Job is already not very happy with what he's been accused of, and he's defending himself. And he's also, to a degree, attacking his friends. See, you guys aren't being very good friends right now. This is not what I need from you. So, how do his friends respond? Let's get to Bildad. Okay? Here's what Bildad has to say. I'm sorry, Job. You're right. We were wrong. We shouldn't have said that. Is that what? That's not how Bildad responds. Bildad, the Shuhite, says, how long will you say these things and the words of your mouth be a great wind? You big old bag of wind, you. That's how Bildad responds. Does God pervert justice? Does the Almighty pervert the right? If your children, look who he brings into it. If your children have sinned against him, he has delivered them into the hand of their transgression. How many children did Job just lose? 10. Just lost 10 kids. All 10 of his children have died, and he says, if your children have sinned against him, then he's delivered them into the hand of their transgression. The children died because they were sinners, Job. That's how Bildad responds. No longer just attacking Job, but attacking Job's children, which doesn't do any good because his children are gone. Look at Job chapter 8 and verse 11. Can papyrus grow where there is no marsh? Can reeds flourish where there is no water? While yet in flower and not cut down, they wither before any other plant. Such are the paths of all who forget God. The hope of the godless shall perish. His confidence is severed. His trust is a spider's web. Okay. You're trusting in a spider's web, Job. You've forgotten God, and that's why you're living without hope, and that's why, like the reed and like the papyrus, you've been cut down. So, what does he call Job's words? A great wind. Great wind is, when somebody says the preacher is just full of wind, is that a compliment to the preacher? No, I do not like to be called a windbag. All right, so that is an insult when you say that. Somebody else had a hand up I saw back there. He says Job's sons had transgressed, right? And so what is he subtly calling Job again? What's that? A bad father, to a degree, bad father, or your children sinned because they were being punished. A little bit. Yeah, you're a sinner. So this is, we're already setting up the philosophy that we're going to get into next week, but we're looking at the friendship aspect of it right now. Just as a friend, you just lost 10 of your kids. Is it really good to start bringing up all the sinful things your kids have done? What? How does that help anything right now? Even if they were sinners, how does that help anything? Pointing out their sins. They're dead. They can't repent. They can't turn from it. You can't help them as a father. You can't fix it. And so, it's hurtful. So, we look at Job's response to Bildad in Job chapter 10 and verse 1. My soul loathes my life, and I will give free course to my complaint. I will speak in the bitterness of my soul. Job's essentially saying, I feel like I have the right to complain a little bit, to be bitter. I will say to God, do not condemn me. Show me why you contend with me. So what does Job really want from God? He's facing all this suffering. It's not just losing his children. It's losing his property and losing his money and losing his health. So what does he want from God here? He doesn't want it from his friends. I don't think his friends are answering right. What's he want from God?
An answer. Why?
It's the question that we all ask when we're facing sometimes. Why is this happening to me? What is God trying to teach me through this? What do I need to learn from this? And obviously Job doesn't want the answer from his friends because they're not providing it. So God answer me. And God is going to answer. And we're going to get to God's answer 2 or 3 weeks from now when we get to chapters 38 through 42. But that's what he really wants. But God lets everybody kind of argue it out, sort it out, figure it out, think through things a little bit. And he allows us to see, what people would say versus what he would say at the end. All right, so we've got Eliphaz, we've got Bildad, we also have the words of Zophar. How does Zophar respond to this? Job says, I'm struggling, I loathe my life, I'm in a terrible shape right now. And so Zophar piles wounds upon wounds. He says, should a multitude of words go unanswered and a man full of talk be judged right? Should your babble silence men? And when you mock, shall no one shame you? For you say, my doctrine is pure, I am clean in God's eyes. And I jump down to verse 12 because I have to think about verse 12 just a minute. A stupid man... This is like one of my favorite verses in the Bible, even though it's totally bad. But a stupid man will get understanding when a wild donkey's colt is born a man. Think about that. Okay. Is a wild donkey's colt ever going to be born a man? No. No. And so, we say things like, when pigs fly, right? We have statements like that, which is not going to happen. And so he's saying, you're an idiot and you're never going to quit being an idiot. That's, Job says, what's it? Exactly. Those are shut down words. Kind of like, we're tired of hearing from you. We're right. You're wrong. And we're just going to tell you at this point, we just think, stupid that you even think that you're pure and you're right. Does that help, engender helpful and edifying conversation? No. And part of what we're supposed to learn from this is how to communicate with each other when we're facing difficult times and when people are struggling and suffering. How to rightly do so, how to not do it. It's clearly something you need to not do. So he insults Job, tells him he's full of babble, very much the same thing. This is why we're not going through this verse by verse, because these are very much the same arguments. This whole middle section is very much the same idea. We need to understand, I think, the general idea that's taking place, not necessarily, when you're studying a book of poetry, not necessarily is there a doctrinal truths that we need to get through every single phrase of every single verse. The main idea is what's key in Job. How does Job feel about the wisdom of his friends? So let's read Job in Job chapter 12. Job answered and said, no doubt you are the people and wisdom will die with you. So he's starting to kind of respond a little bit in kind, right? You guys are so smart. And when you die, there will be no more wisdom on this earth. He's being sarcastic, okay? This is biblical justification that sarcasm is okay, by the way, okay? Wisdom will die with you. I have understanding as well as you. I'm not inferior to you. Indeed, who does not know such things as these? And so you guys are pseudo-intellectuals. What would have been the best thing that his friends could have done? Take a look at chapter 13, verse 5. I think Job tells them. Be silent. It says in verse 4, you are forgers of lies. You are worthless physicians. Oh, that you would just be silent, and that would be your wisdom. I think the book of Proverbs says something about that, right? And it's better to remain silent and be thought a fool than, you know, to open your mouth and remove all doubt. Sometimes silence is a good thing, and that's what he wishes they would have done. You're assuming answers. You don't really know the answers, and it would be better off if you would have just not talked. Sometimes silence is the right response. So the rest of the speeches between Job and his friends follow this very similar pattern of argumentation. How would you feel if you had experienced the losses of Job and you'd heard the words of his friends? How would you feel?
Terrible.
Okay.
Defeated.
Defeated? Yeah.
He's already feeling pretty bad. And then yeah.
He's already hinted it. I just want to give up. And how does that help you not want to give up? So defeated? Terrible? Angry? I think you'd get mad. Maybe there'd be some anger that's. And I think you see that with some of the things that he says and how he responds. Oh, you guys are so smart, and wisdom's going to die with you. That's out of anger. He's a little bit angry, and there is such a thing as righteous anger. I think he's right to be angry. It's this righteous indignation. I want to think about something with you, and so we've looked at some things that are here. But in this ninth question, I want you to notice some things that aren't here. Because I think these are important. As you read through the speeches of Job and his friends, think about the following question. Did Job's friends ever offer to pray with Job? I mean, can you imagine all the things that he's been through, and my friends come to visit, and never once does anyone say, can I just pray with you? You think Job needed that? Did Job's friends ever say, I'm sorry for what you're going through? We don't ever read that. We've got chapters 4 through 37. Think about it. 33 chapters, if my math is right. 33 chapters of speeches, and nobody ever says, I'm sorry for what you're going through. Without trying to blame, without trying to point fingers, I'm sorry for what you're going through. Did Job's friends ever invite Job to come home with them? You're struggling. Some of your houses have fallen down, and why don't you come home with me for a while? Let me just help you. You don't see that. Don't Job's friends bring him anything? At least if they did, we don't see anything. Did they ever bring him food? Ever just bring him some gifts? Just some words? Do we ever see the Hallmark card passed over to Job? You know, just with a few encouraging words intended to comfort and help him? Not even, we just don't see that. We do see them come. So chapter 2, they come and they sit and they weep. That's good. But there's a lot of other things that we just don't see. Did Job's friends ever offer to help him rebuild his flock? Loan him some money? Try to help him get on his feet? obviously these people can walk away from their flocks and their homes. You would assume that they would be wealthy, supposedly wise men themselves. There's other ways that they could have helped, and we don't see that. It's just blame, blame, blame. Did Job's friends ever offer to get Job medical help, take him to a doctor? I think you know we're kind of getting at here. Maybe it's wrong to assume that some of these things would be in here, but what I'm trying to get at is, what are some things we can do when people are suffering? And some of the things you don't see them doing are things that I think we would long for others to do for us and with us. Pray with me. Just, you don't have to explain why you think this happened to me and everything that I should do now that it has happened to me. Just tell me you're sorry and I love you. Sometimes that's all we need. Hear something like that. Come home with me. Just spend some time with me. We don't have to talk. Just come. I'll feed you for a while. You can live with me. Or do you need some money to help you get through this? Those are things that we can do for our friends. And I think it's notable that you don't see some of those things. So what are some of the little things that make a big difference when we are suffering? What are some of the little things? I mean, is there anybody in here that hasn't gone through any type of suffering? What are some of the little things that get you through that have helped you in those times? Yeah, just somebody noticing, card, yeah, phone call, how you doing?
Encouraging words, prayers,
mm-hmm. offers help. Mm-hmm. Okay. Encouraging words, prayers.
Someone who's going through the same or very similar circumstances.
Good. Good. Somebody that's going through the same or a similar circumstance. And I think that's key as well. What is God grooming you for when you go through suffering? Sometimes He's grooming you that one day you can be a comforter to someone else who's going through something similar. You can help them because you've been through it. You know how they're feeling. God can make us better comforters through our trials. We'll take a look at a couple of these passages. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 32. As we look at our New Testament, just read a couple of verses here. Ephesians 4 verse 32 says, be kind to one another. And that's what Job says. You haven't been kind to me. He just wants this. Just be kind. Be tender-hearted. I think being tender-hearted, having a soft heart for people who are going through something that if you were going through or you had gone through, how would you respond to that? Be tender-hearted. Have a soft heart for the situations that people go through. Forgive one another. Not being very forgiving. If Job even had sinned, there's no indication of their forgiveness. It's more accusation. Even as God in Christ forgave you. I think those are some of the things that we want. Kindness. Somebody with a tender heart who's just there to listen and understand, help us through it. Forgiveness. 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 18 is another passage. Paul says as he writes to people, and you know, Paul went through suffering. We forget that sometimes about Paul as he writes. We kind of just read his doctrine and read what he wrote and think about Paul, the great evangelist. He went from city to city and converted lots of people, but he got kicked out of city after city. They threw stones at him. They beat him with rods. He was in shipwrecks. He was falsely accused. The Jews would chase him from town to town until finally he goes back to Jerusalem where he ends up having just more than he can overcome. But he says of Stephanas, Fortunatus, and Achaicus in verse 17, he says, they refreshed my spirit and yours, therefore acknowledge such men. You know, people deserve to be praised when they can refresh you and encourage you. And just, he says that they supplied what was lacking. We don't know what that was, actually. He just says there was something that was lacking, whether it was money or just encouragement, whatever it was, they supplied what was lacking, and because of that, I am so thankful they refreshed me. Let's be people who are not miserable comforters, but people who can be refreshers to people who really need a word of encouragement and help. Find that need where they lack. Do what we can, if we can, to fill it. Craig? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. David?
Two phrases. Seek to understand and don't assume.
Mm-hmm.
His friends assume
mm-hmm.
that he was assuming.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't even try to understand.
Yeah. Good points. And we're gonna look at the assumptions a bunch next week. What are some of the specific assumptions that are made here? Exactly. Seek to understand, don't assume. Robert. Thank you. Robert, I got to make a quick plug for Seth's sermon tonight. It's called Don't Be Too Quick to Judge, okay? So y'all come back tonight and we can hear a whole lesson on that. Setting you up, Seth. There you go. All right. We're about out of time, and there's a couple more questions, but we're going to talk more about the assumptions and the false accusations next week. At the end of Job, let's just kind of finish. Oh, Elaine, go ahead. Thought. That's helpful. So at the end of Job, just to jump ahead, we do want to make this clear. How did God feel about the words of Job's friends? He says, you have not spoken about me what was right. So their assumptions are wrong, and God says they are wrong. So we should take our role as spiritual counselors where we do try to assume things about this is what God's doing here. We need to be careful that we don't put ourselves in the shoes of God. Last thing I just ask you to do as we close, take a look around the room. There are some people who are suffering. Think about what their unique trials are as you think about them, whether it be their health or some person they've lost in their life recently, or raising their kids, or marital, struggles. whatever it is, take a look and see, what can I do, what can I say this week to make a positive difference in their life and be a helpful comfort. All right? Thanks for your time.